All right, what were we saying about comedy before?
Nothing. I don't feel
something about needing it.
Yeah, something about a lack of it.
Oh well.
Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for February 13th, 2009. I am Mike Minotti with my brother Adge Guy. How's it going, Adge Guy?
It's going well.
And you're in Pittsburgh now, huh?
Yeah, this is old school.
Yeah, and we have two guests today. We have David Sword Guy Wynn with us.
Hey.
And Andrew Cyrenix Harrison.
It's Cyrenix, and I'll forgive
Damn
you
it.
Because... I get called Cryonix more often than you could possibly believe.
I always thought it was Cyrenix. Wait, how is it again?
Cyrenix, like Cyrano de Bergerac, you could even say.
Of course.
You're Andrew today.
How could you miss that reference?
Yeah, how about that?
Indeed. What do we got for today, Mike?
Well, I mean, first off, I'm just excited. This is four people. This is a first.
I know, right? We're getting bigger and bigger at an alarming rate.
Yeah, I know. But for today's show... we're going to start off with the news. How's that looking at you guys, the news?
It's looking, strong to moderately strong.
You have some Bioshock 2 stuff in there. That's exciting.
I do have Bioshock 2 stuff.
And what could be the best rumor I've heard in a long time.
Yeah?
You know what I'm talking about?
The Marvel versus Capcom.
Tasty
rumor.
The one.
Of course. Of course that's in there.
Yeah, nice ass guy. Anyways, so... oh, God. So we'll do the news, and then we're going to move on to the Game of the Year 1990. Pretty good year, I have to say. And then we're going to do the Great American Agile Gaming Quiz. Now, AJ, I've toned down the difficulty a little bit here for you. You could win this one.
Oh, man.
You could win this one, so don't screw up. The only one that's, like, impossible is the bonus question, so... and you have two people helping you. You should win this one, okay?
Okay.
Now there's pressure there. Okay, and then after that, we'll talk about our week in gaming, which I could talk about Resident Evil 5 because I was at the midnight launch and everything, and I've been...
aren't you fancy?
I am fancy. I've been playing it, too, so...
all right.
And I'll talk about that. Then we'll move on to the downloadable game releases and the weekly game releases. Then we'll hit the top 10 list on 4-1 Mania, and that'll be the whole show.
All right.
So why don't you get cracking with that news?
All right, so headlining all the events of the week is the Bioshock 2 details coming from Game Informer and their cover story. So have you guys all seen the picture of the Big Sister?
Yeah.
I did manage to see that picture. I got into it initially through that Something Is in the Sea ARG. Have you all seen
it?
Yeah.
I saw that.
It's like... I haven't been super into it, so someone who didn't look more at it, like, what's it about?
I couldn't penetrate it very deeply myself, but, you go to the site and you've got kind of the radio crackle going on and clippings regarding mysterious sightings and eerie red glow in the sea. And
a lot of it is little girls are getting kidnapped.
Right. Well, the supposed plot of Bioshock 2, which takes place 7 years after the original, is that you're playing some character, Jack something or other, and you're like, your daughter's one of the girls who've been kidnapped, and you're going to find her. You'll get the Rapture. It's been very severely damaged, a lot of flooding, which has opened up new areas. The rumored zoo from the original Bioshock will supposedly be making an appearance. And most curiously, there will be no Big Daddies, just the one Big Sister, who's kind of like the main antagonist, I guess.
That's kind of...
just the one, then.
Yeah, just the one.
That's like Nemesis style, you know?
Kind of, yeah. I think it could be really cool.
Me too.
You almost have to wonder, like, so much of the marketing for the first game relied on the Big Daddies. I mean, they got the Big Sister to parade around, but you almost have to wonder
and they were
if
so
that's
going
to hurt marketing.
They kind of became synonymous with Bioshock.
Right.
And so in the same time, I kind of applaud them for taking that departure and taking that
risk.
Yeah,
it is cool. It's definitely a case where the developers won against, like, the marketing department.
Well, yeah, I would have applauded them more for making a sequel that didn't actually have anything to do with the original plotline. Because, honestly, I felt that it wrapped up crappily, but it wrapped up.
Well, I think it's cool. Like, I almost feel like it doesn't, because, like, it's revisiting Rapture, but it feels to me like it is going to be enough of a different story, where it's no longer a story about... waking up this place and figuring out what's going on. It's actually now like a rescue mission in that place. I think it could be really interesting.
I guess.
And then they also said that we're going to have co-op in the game.
Yeah, that will be cool.
I hope so. I mean, I hope it's not kind of a throwaway co-op. There's already going to be a problem because one of the plasmids is like one of those time-slowing plasmids. So have fun with that in co-op.
I'll just slow both of you, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, you have to have some coordination. Oh, one of the other plasmids that they were talking about, new ones, is something that lets you kind of read people's minds.
Really? How's that work?
Well, like, let's say there's a lock somewhere and you need the code. You can read someone's mind and they'll, like, you'll figure out the code that way, I guess.
Oh, that actually kind of sounds almost like a replacement for the audio diaries.
I was trying to... There was another game that did that. You could, like, you could hijack into people's minds and, like, think or hear what they were thinking. God, what the hell was that game?
Oh, is it the one on the GameCube?
It might have been.
Or, like, you could also, like, control, like, a
no, no, that was Geist.
Dog.
That was shit.
Oh, okay.
Not but, Geist.
Well,
that
to
was
me,
made by the... That was made by a Mary-Kate and Ashley team. And I just love that. Yeah, it was made by people who made a Mary-Kate and Ashley GBA game.
Nice. Good for them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good on Bioshock, I suppose. Let's go to our usual story of Burnout, where this week we got the Boost Specials Collection. It's the Hawker Mech and the Carson Extreme Hot Rod. You could get them $3 a pop for $5 for both. I haven't done it yet. These I'm more interested in than the toy cars, so I'll probably get these next week sometime. Yeah. I don't know. Are you guys big into Burnout at all?
I like Burnout, but I don't really download cars for anything. Anything that's just like a minor tweak.
The allure of the DeLorean was too much for me. I had to get that.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
A DeLorean.
I made an exception.
Yes, I think a lot of people did. What's this picture you've linked? I'll click it. Anyway, so Monster Hunter Tri is coming to the Wii,
which we
all know about. And they've announced that, I guess I shouldn't be too surprised, but there will be a $10 a month online play fee, which... It's like it's the same reason why I said like I called bullshit on like monthly charges for Phantasy Star and why I still maintain that PSU didn't take off. Because for this style of game, I think with stuff like Diablo and Guild Wars and everything, like people see where you don't have to pay a monthly fee for the same kind of experience. And I like in Japan, I have no doubt that like they're going to make a buttload of money off of this. But this game has not penetrated the North American market at all. And if they ever want it to, charging a monthly fee is not going to help.
Yeah. Well, I think there are just other reasons that they would feel the need to, because honestly, it's probably not going to do that great anyway. So they're probably going to try and recoup the investment as best they can by squeezing out as much money from those very small group of people as they can.
Yeah, and it makes sense from a business standpoint. It just seems really shady.
Yeah, it's really asshole-ish.
It just seems too many games have subscriptions. I mean, after a while, the average person will not have more than two game subscriptions at a time.
Right, and you got to figure there's 11 million people who already subscribed to World of Warcraft, so that's like almost saying, like, here's 11 million people who probably won't pay to play your game because they're paying for something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I also wonder how much the audiences intersect there. Like, how many people, like, maybe a million people would be sort of interested in playing both games.
Like, I'd be interested in playing Monster Hunter Tri, because I rented I rented the PSP one, and I found it really boring, but I could see it being fun with, you know, three other people, just in the same way that Phantasy Star was. But I have no interest in paying for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to talk about the intersection of markets, I mean, think about all the marketing that was done towards, you know, elderly couples and retirement homes, or, you know, stay-at-home moms and, you know, families. It's a family system. Then how many of those people owning a Wii are going to say, sure, I want to pay $10 a month for this?
I don't think they're going to get Monster Hunter regardless. I mean, let's face it, the reason they did this is because they could churn this out much more quickly than they could do a full-on PS3 version of Monster Hunter. They could it's probably just like a slightly enhanced port of one of the PS2 ones.
Well, and also you can downport the Wii version to the PSP.
Right, which I'm sure will happen.
Speaking of weird Nintendo marketing, has anyone seen the new Professor Layton commercial?
No.
No.
It's weird. They're rebranding Professor Layton as like one of those games like for, you know, like the middle-aged moms. And it's like one of those commercials where the two, like, you know, women are there on the couch and they're like, oh, we're having fun playing on the DS. And it's so weird and casual and wow.
I did actually get my mom to play that, though.
Did you like it?
Yeah, she was entertained for like 5 minutes and then like every other game she's tried to play, she gave up.
I'm starting to get pissed off because there's been two sequels for that game in Japan and the third one's coming plus a movie and I really want some more Professor Layton over here.
Yeah.
Instead they're still marketing the first one.
Yeah.
Someday.
That movie looks sweet, by the way. They had some little commercials.
Does it look like the game?
Yeah,
does it look like the triplets of Bevel?
Yes, exactly.
I hate that movie.
Shut up, AJ. That movie's
good. Let's not go there.
I'm going to watch it later this week.
Enjoy it.
We'll see.
Call of Duty World at War map pack coming March 19th.
Don't you change the subject. I mean,
that's my job. Four new maps, including one of them will be a new map for the zombie mode. They haven't set a price, but I imagine 800 points / $10. But the PC version has been, like, it's not the same day. They said, you know, stay tuned for more info, so who knows when that's coming. But for COD4, the PC maps were free, so maybe they'll be free again. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not.
So there was all this talk that supposedly on March 12th, Capcom was going to make some big Resident Evil announcement, and the rumor was that it was going to be a Wii port or some kind of port, upgraded port of Code Veronica. Actually, it is a new game called Resident Evil Dark Side Chronicles, which is another Umbrella Chronicles-esque rail shooter set in the Resident Evil 2 timeline with Claire and Leon. They also announced Wii ports of Resident Evil 0 and 1 that were previously Japan-only coming to North America.
Not bad. I was still kind of hoping that, like, they were going to make a new Resident Evil for the Wii that kind of played like the Wii version of RE4.
That's what, right? I was hoping for.
Yeah, like something like maybe not, you know, like a number sequel, but like a Code Veronica or something like that, which is still part of the timeline and everything.
I imagine they will eventually.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, just because, I mean, sales for Resident Evil 5 are good in Japan the first week, but, you know, it's number one, but they say when you compare it to like how Resident Evil 2 or 3 sold back when, it doesn't really compare, just because, you know, that this isn't the lead SKU anymore. And I think, I mean, it seems like Capcom wants Resident Evil to primarily be a Wii franchise, except for when it comes to, like, the big, you know, numbered installment. Then, you know,
yeah,
that one's
going to come out. That's a good
point. I bet, actually, if they could do it again, they probably would have made Resident Evil 5 for the Wii. They seem to be really high on it right now. Yeah.
Did you say there were some ports coming that were previously Japan only?
Yeah.
Well, the Resident Evil 0 Wii port was Japan only, and then the RE1, it's the GameCube port, but they're Wii-tizing it, or whatever you'd call that.
Would you give it a...
But I think that's been on Japan, too. Sorry,
has it?
Ahead.
I wasn't sure.
Okay.
Then we also got the Resident Evil 5 Versus DLC coming very soon.
See, that's kind of crappy.
It's two multiplayer modes. Slayer's Rule, it's a point-based game where you're trying to kill Majinis, I guess those are the zombies. And Survivor's Rule, where it's like a more of a player versus player. They're either one-on-one or two-on-two. It'll be $5 for the pack. But, like, for this to have come so soon, and Capcom, I didn't write down the quote, I should have, but they tried to explain why this costs money and why it's not free. And, you know, they're saying, like, you know, we never intended to put multiplayer on, but we decided to, so here it is.
It's, and
like,
we developed it in just a week.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like, this is 4 years ago, this would have been, we're going to delay the game for a month, put this on the disc, and it's all in the game. But now that we can download it and charge for it, we're going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of thing is normally just in the Resident Evil game.
And here's the thing, too. I mean, I think, like, in this day and age with so many multiplayer games that are so big, for your multiplayer mode to catch on as hard as it is, but when you're going to sell it completely separately for money, this will have no legs.
This,
like, I guarantee
doomed.
You, in 2 months, you will not be able to find a game of this. Like, this will be something that you play with your friends only, and that's it.
Well, then I can't imagine it would be a whole hell of a lot of fun, just because Resident Evil 4 and 5 are based around, in part, you not being able to be shot, mostly. It's a bunch of enemies that have to come up to and bite you. It's essentially playing against Pac-Man ghosts, whereas if you're playing RE5 multiplayer, you decide to aim around a bit, and then you're screwed because some guy behind you has a shotgun. You can't do any jack shit about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just envision two people with pistols running. They see each other. Both of them stop and just start shooting at each other.
Actually, no, like, you can make that a great quick draw game, now that I think about it.
There you go, yeah. Put some cowboy hats as DLC, like a month from now.
Can it be like that Kirby quick draw mini game? I liked that one the best.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Use a fan.
Oh, God. Go ahead, Asgard.
All right, so this may shock you all, but more Fable 2 DLC is coming. It was confirmed on the Fable 2 development blog.
Oh, man.
Mind-blowing.
Where I make some kind of interesting note of this is, I don't know if... Do you guys know who Jonathan Ross is?
Never heard of him.
He's some kind of personality on the BBC. And he Twittered a few days ago, like, his daily schedule, and he said, like, and going down to Lionhead to record dialogue for Fable 3. And, like, you know, everyone's like, oh, Fable 3 confirmed, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, he later Twittered, like, his next daily schedule is, like, organizing some DVDs and apologizing to Peter for breaking his announcement. But I almost kind of wonder, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if Fable 3 is coming as well, but I almost wonder if maybe he's actually doing voice work for the Fable 2 DLC that they're talking about and just doesn't know what that means.
Yeah, that seems more likely, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Fable 3 already... I mean, I know they're working on it, but they're already at a point where they're recording dialogue. I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, like, I mean... Like I said, I'm guessing this guy's in the Fable 2 DLC because they announced it, like, the next day. So I bet that's what it is, but we'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is curious. I didn't even realize this, but the Lord of the Rings games license left EA at the end of 2008. That's when their contract expired.
Yeah, I heard that.
I mean,
that.
Obviously, they still released Conquest, I guess, because it was in development. But the license has gone back to Warner Brothers, who... I mean, the reason they gave it to EA in the first place in 01, 02 is they really weren't big into the gaming market then, but obviously that's changed. So they've got the license back. I'm sure they'll use it. Plus, Warner Brothers has a stake in Turbine, the guys who make Lord of the Rings Online, which makes me wonder if that game might get some more film influences into it now. Like, obviously they're not going to go and, like, reskin it to match the movie aesthetic, but, like, I wonder if, like, maybe music will creep its way in there.
Why does Warner Brothers own Lord of the Rings?
They have the game license. I don't understand where it all comes from. It's such an old convoluted license. I really don't get it.
Maybe they got it during the Super Nintendo era.
It's specifically the movie game license.
Oh, well,
so I don't understand
it,
how that works. Yeah. I mean, do they own New Line? Who owns New Line?
Maybe they do own New Line. I don't know.
That must be something like that. I don't know. The studio structure is very confusing to me anymore.
It is.
So other movie license games. An animator from Traveler's Tales has inadvertently let slip confirmations of Lego Harry Potter and Lego Indy in the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
Lego Harry Potter could be interesting. I'll pass on Indy and the Crystal Skull.
Either of these.
Yeah. I almost feel like that would work if it was like a DLC expansion for Lego Indy.
How are they going to just do that? How are they going to do that? That's just one movie.
Right.
And a bad one, too.
The other interesting thing was it's just a pitch, so this shouldn't be taken as like a confirmation, but they're pitching to do a Lego Hobbit game based off the upcoming Hobbit films, which could be cool.
Films.
Oh, get over yourself.
Oh, you get over yourself, Asguy.
It's going to be sweet, I hope.
This, I like that banner. Okay, there was no book. There was no other book.
Well, there is now.
oh, is there? God.
We've got some Gears of War 2 updates coming. First will be a title update on March 24th with a whole new experience point system because people complain they don't understand how the TruSkill thing works. So, yeah, you'll get experience points.
Everything's just going to be like Call of Duty soon.
Basically, yeah. They're also going to release the Snowblind map pack on March 31st. Three new maps called Grindyard, Underhill, and Courtyard, and a remake of a Gears of War 1 map called Fuel Depot. No price announced, but again, I'm guessing $10.
Why?
I don't know, because that's what every other map pack for Gears has ever cost.
Yeah,
and
that's
every
true.
Other map pack ever. Period.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not still playing Gears.
Yeah. And the last point of business I have, because I have this all the time and was saving it for last, is there was a mention VideoGamer.com in an interview with Capcom's VP of Business Development, Christian Svensson, that they would like to do Marvel vs. Capcom 2 HD Remix. This should be in no way taken as confirmation that it's coming or happening, but it's just something they want to.
Yeah,
they
I can't. Was going to say, it's in the sense that I would also like a pony in my backyard, but my job is paying me minimum wage.
But they have access to ponies. They just have to get them, so it's a little more feasible.
Well, have you ever heard
EA
a studio just be
Marvel
like...
Marvel vs. license.
No, I think
I heard
EA lost
they
it.
Just left it. Yeah, they just lost it.
I don't know who has it. I think Marvel's pretty open to working with whoever now, because like Sega did the Iron Man game, but didn't someone else... Do the Hulk game or something?
Yeah, that license isn't tied down to any one publisher anymore. Thank God, because as God, Marvel Nemesis, Rise of the Imperfects,
that was terrible.
Yeah, but I mean, how many times do you hear an official from a company just be like, "Yeah, we think it'd be great if we made this game. I don't know if we will."
Well, like, you hear Keiji Inafune saying that all the time about like Mega Man Legends.
Mega
3.
Man Legends. Yeah, I thought as soon as I said that, I did think about that. But you get the idea from him that he's kind of like. That's kind of wishful thinking, whereas with Marvel vs. Capcom 2, I think there'd be a consumer base for it.
Yeah.
And I was expecting maybe we get a port, but the idea of an HD remix
Capcom 2, if we do get a port, you're not going to be satisfied.
No, now I'm not. If I just get a, like before a port, I'd be like, yeah, that's pretty cool. Now that it's saying HD remix, which is interesting because, I mean, Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is just a bunch of sprite recycling anyways, so the idea that they're going to redraw all those sprites...
They've got the Street Fighter 2 characters done.
There's a lot of sprites in there, though.
Yeah, there's a shit ton of sprites.
It's like 58 characters or something like that.
And all of them have a shitload of animation.
Yeah, they have...
They claim that they've learned a lot in HDifying Street Fighter 2 and Puzzle Fighter, so that hopefully the process will be more streamlined. Because I know part of why HD Remix took so long for Street Fighter 2 was... there was, like, the first studio they contracted to do the art. There was some kind of... communication issue, it all fell apart, they got rid of them, went with another company, Udon, and it was a lot of communication struggles at first, but they ironed it all out towards the end. So hopefully if they do it, the process will be more smooth.
I wonder if they'll rebalance some things, you know, just with, I mean,
I'm trying to balance that game, though.
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about it as much in that game.
You could at least tone down the freaking, what do they call
it?
Robot.
Oh, the serve bots.
Not the serve bot. That's a little.
You can
robot.
Run into a corner and you can't hit them.
Huh. Yeah, that's true. But what's that giant robot from X-Men?
Oh, crap.
Oh,
Sentry.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. No? Yeah. He needs toned down a little bit.
Well, Doctor Doom, is just notoriously busted as hell.
Yeah.
He was in my party.
Yeah,
he was too. I had Dr. Doom, Iceman, and Venom.
You had all the cheap characters and Venom.
Yeah.
And Venom. You had that was a terrible party. You don't even have any Street Fighter people. You just have Marvel.
Sometimes I throw in Ryu for Venom.
And I still want to see a Marvel vs. Capcom 3 because I just want some new characters in there. I feel like I just feel like they did a good job of having some Capcom characters in there that weren't just from fighting games, and I want to see more of that.
They had that weird, that cactus dude who was original to that game. I love that guy.
Oh, yeah.
They had a couple original people.
I always called him, Taco Man or something, because I never knew what his name was. I only just, learned this afternoon that it was a Mingo.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, God, I want more. This better happen now. This better freaking happen. You can't just have a guy go on there and say, yeah, a lot of people want it. We think it'd be a great idea, but I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, no, you better freaking do it. We'll get, Darkstalkers HD Remix. I'll be like, oh, fantastic. Thanks for that one.
Yeah.
Nothing against Darkstalkers, you know. Vampires with cleavage.
All right, well, that's the news I got, unless you guys got anything you want to add to it.
No, not really. I'm good.
Dead silence.
I don't think so.
In that case, let's move on.
All right. Let's talk about the game of the year for 1990. So, we got some Super Nintendo in here, too, finally, now.
Oh, man, at last.
This is the year the Super Famicom came out in Japan.
Yep. So, let's just get to it. First, I have Bonk's Adventure, actually.
Oh, I love that game.
Yes, the kind of forgotten 2D platformer.
Well, because it was on the TurboGrafx.
Dawn's Revenge is so much more awesome, though.
Well, true. But Adventure laid the groundwork.
It's true.
Those were fun games. I don't know. When I got one of them on the Virtual Console, and it just wasn't quite the same. But they were fun way back when. I put this basically mostly just for my sake, Castle of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse.
F yes.
Yeah, that was an awesome game. That's back when Disney licensed games didn't suck.
Yeah, we always say that like that, but the more I talk to people, the more like everyone seems to like that game. And its sequel, World of Illusion.
World of Illusion quite so much.
Oh, but it had the co-op.
Okay, it did have that going for it, but I didn't have any friends who wanted to play with me. All they ever wanted to play was Streets of Rage.
Fair.
So then we also have Columns, which I just wanted to throw up there. Popular puzzle game for the Genesis, which creeps the hell out of me for some reason. Something about that aesthetic. It's just eerie, isn't it? Anyone? Come on, guys. I know Columns scares all of you.
You sound like you came out of Cybertron or something.
Yeah, you had an audio hiccup, but that's why we're recording in this new way. So you won't the people listening won't know what we're talking about. It'll be great.
That's good.
Anyway, keep going.
F-Zero came out on the Super Nintendo. Drew
F-Zero
wanted me to point that one out.
Is a game that I did not get my head around until on one of the GBA versions when I finally accepted the fact that I am not steering this vehicle. I am rotating the world beneath it.
Yeah,
like one of those weird carnival games where you're trying to get like a ring through the maze without touching the sides.
I think I just talked about it last week. How I just can't be good at any of those old F-Zero games. Not until it went 3D did I even get a grip on it. The original Fire Emblem came out back on the Famicom.
Just came out this year on the DS.
Yes, ironic. So I wanted to throw that up there. John Madden Football came out. How about that?
Oh
man!
Wow.
There it is.
1990. Which kind of surprised me because weren't they saying like 20th anniversary?
I didn't understand the math, but yeah, this year was, for whatever reason, the 20th anniversary.
I don't think that one was made by EA, though. I think Madden 90-something, whichever the 20th anniversary it was of, was the first EA one.
Okay. I'll accept that.
It was made by some Japanese guys who had no idea what football was.
I bet that was probably awesome. The best one.
Yeah, probably. It was Tecmo.
We have Loom also.
Loom is awesome.
Oh,
it is cool.
I never actually beat that. I need to do that someday.
It was an early squad mission way back when.
Yeah, before I was on.
And then we have Mega Man 3, which is my favorite Mega Man game.
I agree.
True.
Well, okay, Mega Man X I like a bit more, but other than that...
Daring.
I like the wall slides.
Mega Man X 1 was pretty sweet. I will have to give that to you. Mega Man X is the best Mega Man game that has a... The Mega Buster charging thing.
Yeah. And so long as you skipped all the angsty cutscenes, awesome.
Yes.
No way, man.
Oh, except
Zero
for...
freaking sacrificing himself.
Okay, I felt kind of sad when I was 9, but nowadays, embarrassing. I don't want anybody looking over my shoulder while I'm playing that.
What about Mega Man 3? Don't you cry when, like,
when you find
crushed?
Out Proto Man is your brother?
Yeah.
Oh, how sad. He looks like Razor X. I loved him.
Then you see his face in the sky. I think that's 3. I can't remember.
It was something. And then the sad whistle comes in.
Yeah.
Oh, how touching.
Good stuff. Metal Gear 2 came out for the MSX.
Which is essentially Metal Gear Solid in 2D.
Yeah, it is. It's got almost everything there. It's just doesn't look like Metal Gear Solid.
It's just 2D and old.
I think it has the... heat-sensitive key card thing, too. Which...
Really?
Yeah. I could be wrong about that. It was either... I think it was. It was either that or the Ghost Babel for Game Boy. But, it was just as infuriating in 2D.
I think you might be right. Anyways, then we have Secret of Monkey Island came out. Still one of my all-time favorites.
That's a good
love
game.
It.
It's a nice shame I've not played it. I've not played any of the Monkey Island games.
You've not played
any?
A Monkey Island game.
Ooh,
yeah,
you need to
I know,
get on
I
that.
Suck. It's,
oh, man.
That and Sam and Max are my two great shames.
another good one.
And you know, even when we've got, you know, Minority Report level technology, ScumVM is still going to be ported to it. So yes. You really don't have any excuse for, you know, right. platform
yeah,
reasons.
I can play it on my cell phone.
I played Monkey Island on my iPhone not too long ago.
I'm playing through CMI on my Wii right now.
Yeah. We got Star Tropics came out, which I wanted to throw up there for being kind of old and obscure.
Good game.
Yeah. Did you see there's, like, another Nintendo tease about, like, it's very vague, but there's, like, something like it happened 10 years ago. And people are saying, like, it might either be, like, Star Tropics, Smash Brothers, or Star Fox. But people don't know what that you're talking about.
Yeah. It'll probably be, like, that Super Mario sweater game that came out, or teaching you how to knit a sweater on Wii.
At first you said that Super Mario sweater game that came out, and I'm like, which one is he talking about?
Yeah, no, it came out. It was in Japan only, but it's like I'm a teacher, Super Mario No Sweater. That is the name. No,
I'm not joking.
It's an actual teaching you how to knit game.
I have to say, this is oddly appealing to me. I might have to figure out how I can acquire this.
It's a Famicom game. If you can understand any Japanese, go find a ROM. Or import it.
I can learn Japanese and how to knit.
Yeah.
There you go. It's educational.
That's up there with something. My goals of being able to learn Japanese just so I can understand that and understand what the hell is going on in disastrous biomonster Jesus.
Hey, AJ.
Oh, my. Yes.
That's a real
Remember?
Game, too.
Are you going to bring up when we tried to learn Japanese so we could import Pokemon Stadium?
It was so we could play the ROM of Pokemon Gold and Silver, first off.
Oh, that's it, yeah. I knew something with Pokemon. I learned to recognize the Japanese phrases for yes and no, and that was about all that came of that.
Man, well, I can't believe we actually thought, like, well, we can't
wait.
We can't wait for this game to come out. So we'll just learn Japanese and download a ROM and play it.
Man.
Oh, we were brilliant back then.
It was Pokemon Gold and Silver, man. I mean, you know, you couldn't wait.
If I were internet savvy enough at that point in time, I probably would have done it too.
We tried. I had some websites. They didn't help me much, but
yeah, too bad we didn't realize that we would still have to, you know, try and learn things.
Yeah.
Anyways, Super Mario World came out. Simmy's and Drew Robbins wanted me to point that out, and I would have anyways, because Super Mario World is my favorite Mario game.
It's my favorite 2D Mario game.
What's your favorite 3D Mario game?
I always go back and forth. You know, I have mostly fond memories of 64.
Right. I think it's between 64 and Galaxy.
I think, you could probably say Galaxy is a better designed game, but in my mind, as a, like, 12-year-old playing Super Mario 64, that was one of the best experiences of my life. And
yeah, when you realize that you could run in a full circle.
Yeah.
Like,
well, whenever I first played that, I was so worried. I couldn't. I was like, how am I going to run in a straight line? I have a stick. I can't do that. I need a D-pad. I had OCD for like the first 15 minutes of playing, and then I just got over it.
There you go.
It is hard to kind of get over that such like shock factor of playing Mario 64. I think everyone remembers the first time they played and just like how amazing it was, and how even how visually striking it was. Just even today, just like the color choices and stuff, the game doesn't look bad.
Well, the characters don't look bad.
No.
Yeah, if you go back and play it on Virtual Console, though. I recently had this problem whenever I was looking at Ocarina of Time 2, is that the characters look really nice because they're all rendered in full polygons or whatever, but all the backgrounds look just hideous because
they're just the flat.
Yeah, they
up-res
maps. They up-res them, and it had a real crap texture cache, so everything just looks like this blurry, just pile of vomit. It's horrible, but yeah, awesome game.
Yes, Turrican came out. Simmy's wanted me to point that out, which is a famous shmup.
No, it's not a shmup. It's
Contra. I always say this is
it's
a shmup.
Contra-ish.
What is it then?
Right,
which what? You shoot and up, so it's a shmup.
Yeah, but it was made by Factor 5, right?
Wait, AJ, why isn't it a shmup?
Shmups are where you're in a ship scrolling from side to side. This is like Contra, where you're running around
from side to side.
Yeah, but there's platforming involved.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Isn't there Isn't there some sort of Turrican that is a shmup?
No.
Whatever. Okay. Simi's also wanted me to point out Rick Dangerous 2. So,
I have no idea what that is.
What is that?
I've heard of
anyone?
It.
You got me beat.
Huh. All right. I should have looked it up. Well, that's it. That's the whole list there.
Oh, no. So, oh, no. Oh, no. I'm not going to let you get away with that.
That's right. You guys help me out. What do you want me to throw up there? I always forget at least a couple of gems. All right. Help me out, guys.
Go ahead.
Who's going first? Oh, okay. I got Eye of the Beholder, which is an old gold box game. Really hard as hell. Really awesome. It's a first-person dungeon crawler. And it was probably not as good as Ultima Underworld, but I still loved it a lot anyway, just because of the fragility of items and characters. Everything, all your gear would just break, like, damn near instantaneously. And it's frustrating as hell, but it made you really conservative with your actions. And combine that with, like, just, like, some of the most horrible, complex level design I've ever seen, with, like, teleporter puzzles out the ass, and you have to, like, make maps on graph paper. It was just an infuriating experience that I loved when I was a little kid. Devil's Crush for TurboGrafx.
Huh.
What's that? That now? I like the name. I like the name. I'll give it that.
Devil's,
let's hear it.
You haven't heard of Devil's Crush? Come on.
No.
It's an amazing... No. It's on Virtual Console. You need to go download it. It's an amazing pinball game.
Oh, I think I have heard of this now. Not you say pinball. Crazy, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it has crazy, like, I think TurboGrafx isn't quite 16-bit, it's like 12-bit, in that it's got a, like, crap processor working in conjunction with an 8-bit processor. But, yeah, it's got this amazing amazing for the time, heavy metal music, really just satanic graphics, and it's filled with butt rock, and it's so awesome. I don't know what else I can say about it, but it was really good video pinball, which is kind of a contradiction of terms, but whatever.
Is it better than Kirby pinball?
Well, considering that it's not on the GBA, or on the Game Boy, so you can actually see what you're doing, I'd say yes.
Ooh, oh, there you go. What about Super Game Boy, huh?
Oh, bro.
I never had it. I didn't have any of that fancy technology.
That's right, because we were awesome. High five, Edge Guy.
Yeah.
Is your arm up? Are you high five in the air? Like I'm there?
Slap that.
Okay. All right. You must bump this. Okay. So thank you. Anything else, Dave?
Quick aside. The TurboGrafx 16 has an 8-bit CPU and a dual 16-bit GPU.
Whoa.
So there you go.
Thank you, I guess.
Madness. Okay. The one. Just three more.
Okay. Oh, boy. Let's hear him.
Smash TV.
Oh, good call.
My bad.
Totally rad twin-stick shooter. Let's see. Liquid Kids, which is a really cool, obscure arcade game, which is essentially just Bubble Bobble, except you're playing as a hippopotamus, and you throw, like, balls of water. So you can charge them up and make them, like, bigger bubbles, essentially. Except they have gravity applying to them, so you're throwing in an arc and you hit enemies and then you jump on them to pop them the same way. But
that has my vote.
Yeah, it's a side-scrolling... it's slightly more traditional than Bubble Bobble. And then last, just because I couldn't resist, Digital Devil Story Megami Tensei 2 for Super Famicom, which was the second Shin Megami Tensei game. Not actually based on a really shitty horror novel this time.
I didn't realize that this series was that old.
Yeah, it started in 1987.
Jeez.
Well, older than that if you really want to count those, as I said, really shitty horror novels.
Right.
This one was post-apocalyptic, though. Oh, crap. I forgot to. Anyway, this one was post-apocalyptic. It started off, you saw a nuclear explosion and a guy's face screaming. It was pretty rad.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah, and some guy is working on a fan translation of a remake, but that guy's been quiet for like a month, or like 3 months, so I don't know what's happening.
Never a good sign.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it had demon negotiation and all that. It was a lot of fun. No, it actually was shit, but it was really, really hard. I'll just leave it at that.
Historical significance.
Yeah. Okay, and then I forgot two other games. ActRaiser,
Oh, okay.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Which everybody's played, I think. So I'm not going to describe that one too much. Just, it was really good. And then also on the post-apocalyptic kick, Crystalis for NES. Did anybody play Crystalis?
Yeah, you're going to have to explain that one.
Do you know what Crystalis is? It's
no.
Sort of like I said, Zelda, but post-apocalyptic. It starts off with, like, humankind destroying each other. It's essentially, it's kind of a ripoff slash very heavily inspired by, what was the Studio Ghibli movie? It was very early. Nausicaa.
Castle in the Sky?
No, Nausicaa.
Older, like 1990.
Yeah.
Castle in the Sky is pretty old.
Yeah, that was 87.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Shut up, Adge.
I guess just because they didn't come here.
Nausicaa.
You don't know shit about Miyazaki.
My head is now hanging in shame. Continue.
That's right.
Anyway, Nausicaa, Valley of the Sky, or Valley of the Wind, whatever. It's,
okay.
Yeah, it's very much like that. Except you can actually go out into the world and not have to worry about being poisoned by spores or shit. But it's essentially Zelda, except skewed more toward RPG. You, like, level up, you get money, you can go into towns and buy stuff. And, you know, it has a little bit of story. My favorite part of it, though, is that in Japan it was called God Slayer. Which,
oh.
Yeah, that's so adorable. I love that.
That's a great name.
Yeah, and I don't think there's actually any God slaying in it, but I just think that whole Japanese fascination with killing God is just hilarious and stupid.
Things Japanese love. They love killing God, and they love having 12-year-olds save the world.
Actually, now that I think about it, Megami Tensei 2 that I mentioned earlier, you could kill Yahweh. They called him YHWH.
There you go.
I'm sure the Jews love that.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure it was great. And then I had two really shitty games listed here just for entertainment. Mad Dog McCree, which I have, yeah.
Shitty! You take that back,
what do you mean,
sir!
Shitty?
Okay,
you take
I'm sorry.
That back!
It was hilarious.
Mad Dog McCree was awesome.
Anyway, I had no idea it was a 1990 game.
Yeah, me neither. I had it for the 3DO.
Yeah, I always associated that with, like, 3DO's Sega CD era of the full motion video horror shows.
You know, that's a game that doesn't come up often when you talk about best boss fights ever. But man, that was great.
That's very true.
The whole game's just building up to this quick draw with Mad Dog McCree. You're just waiting to draw with Mad Dog McCree, and you finally get there. He's like, all right, let's do it. You draw, and by God, was he fast. Oh man, what a great game.
No, man. Okay, and then I swear this is my last one for real this time. Double Dragon 3, the Rosetta Stone.
I kind of purposely glossed over that one.
Yeah, which is notable for being the very first game that I can think of with microtransactions, essentially.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
In the arcade, you could go into shops, pay a quarter, and get weapons.
No shit.
Yeah, huh. So they were ripping off people way before Microsoft ever thought about it.
Yeah. Long before Horse Armor, there was Double Dragon 3 with Bimmy and Jimmy.
Oh, that was just the NES version, though. You missed out on that glorious bit of humor in the arcade.
I guess so.
Alas.
All right, Andrew, what do you got
there too?
Well, I've only really got the one to add to this discussion, and early on, it wasn't the most graphically impressive, but I got to give props to the Commander Keen series, which kicked off at the very end of 1990.
Yeah.
You're talking about kids saving the world. This is pretty much a North American example of it.
Mm-hmm.
You get to play as little Billy Keen using his Bean with Bacon rocket ship and traveling to fight all kinds of robots and monsters. And the very early one, I think it's Invasion of the Vorticons. The graphics are still pretty chunky, but the gameplay is there, and you really can't fault it for fun. And you can actually pick up the entire series on Steam now. I think it's got 5 of the 6 games.
Mm-hmm.
And around number 4, Goodbye Galaxy, that was when it really started to pick up. But 1990, it got its start, and that was one of the first PC games I ever played. So, fond memories there.
That was id, wasn't it?
It was. It was an early id game.
Hmm.
Very different from
All right,
Doom.
Then. So, that's 1990 in a nutshell. We kind of have to all come to a consensus now and pick a game of the year for 1990. Do you guys want me to kind of go over the list I had real quick again?
I don't think we have time.
We have time. Oh, please.
All right. Well, go fast.
Wait, I have an issue here. I just have to say names on a list. How long would that possibly take? 10 seconds?
It's a long... Okay, go. Let's Bonk's Adventure, time you now. Go.
Bonk's Adventure, Castle of Illusion, Columns, F-Zero, Fire Emblem, John Madden Football, Loom, Mega Man 3, Metal Gear 2, The Secret of Monkey Island, Star Tropics, Super Mario World, Turrican, and Rick Dangerous 2 are on my list.
14 seconds.
Oh, man.
All right. My votes are Crystalis, except you guys aren't going to vote for it because you haven't played it.
Right.
Yeah. I think we can kind of agree that maybe it should come down to Super Mario World or Secret of Monkey Island.
Yeah, that's what it is in my head.
Okay, is everyone else is everyone else agreeing?
Yeah, yes, I would have to go with Super Mario World. Just I'm Captain Obvious there, but
it's obvious.
I probably agree with you guys. Maybe Monkey Island will get its due when we do Monkey Island 2 next time. But Secret Monkey Island is great, but Super Mario World was just for me that's the perfect 2D platformer for me. I don't think it ever got any better than that. And Mega Man 3 is my favorite Mega Man game, but we already kind of gave props to Mega Man 2. And Mega Man 3 didn't really do a whole lot to advance it unless you were really that excited about the slide. So I'm going to say Super Mario World.
It advanced the canon.
Thank
God for that.
It gave us Proto Man, so yeah, that's cool. All right.
Yes.
Super Mario World then. So what was 86 was Legend of Zelda. 87 was the first Metal Gear. 88 was Mega Man 2. 89 was what was 89, AJ?
Strider.
I don't know. Don't you write these down?
I don't write them down. I just think about them.
It's
going to
get harder.
It was
Tetris?
Yes, it was Tetris.
Yeah, it was Tetris.
It was Tetris. Thank you.
I thought someone listens to this
Strider
show.
Strider was back in.
If you say so.
Okay, Tetris, and then now we have Super Mario World, 1990.
All right.
Thanks. Good segment. I like that.
Indeed.
AJ keeps complaining about going too long, but I think everyone likes it.
Yeah, the kids love the long podcasts.
That's right, Edge Guy. It's all the rage. All right, now it's time for the Great American Edge Guy Gaming Quiz, which I now hope he loses.
Here we go.
I was being nice to him and putting in all these easier questions.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'll see, though. All right. So 5 questions and a bonus question. I know you already know the answer to the first one, so because you said it right. Number one, and again, these questions are all inspired by games from 1990. Number one, what was the name of Castle of Illusion sequel?
World of Illusion.
All right, there you go.
Yay.
Number two, what fake name does Proto Man use to disguise himself in Mega Man 3?
Oh, crap.
Oh, man.
Oh, God, I should know this.
I know.
No cheating, anyone.
I know. I was like, I could go on Wikipedia but I won't.
Not. Yeah.
I won't.
I'm an honorable kid.
Yeah.
Do either of you two know?
I keep on wanting to say Racer X.
Me too. Me too.
I somehow don't think that's it. We'll say that. Racer X.
No, Brakeman.
That's it.
Ah.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
All right. Number three. You can still win here, Edge Guy. You got to get all these other ones right. Number three, what was the name of Star Tropics sequel?
Star Tropics 2.
Star Tropics 2, Zora's Revenge.
Zoda's Revenge.
No, Zoda's. Yeah, Zoda's. Zoda's Revenge.
Okay, I'll give it to you. I was about to say no. You're saying
wasn't
Zora.
Wasn't that a question before, actually? And I did the
same. It may have been quite a long time ago, yeah. It may have been. God. Okay, number four. According to The Secret of Monkey Island, what is the only optional ingredient in grog?
Pepperoni.
That is correct.
Bravo. Technically, though, when you say and/or, it doesn't mean it's just the pepperonis and/or. All of them are ors. But I know what you meant.
Okay.
Oh, please. Anyways, number five. Metal Gear 2 took place in what fictional country?
Oh. Zanzibar Land.
Yes.
That is correct. Okay.
Which is just the dumbest name ever, but...
All right, you get this last question right, and I don't think
God,
you will.
Oh my God, I could actually win one.
I don't think you will. Sorry, this is the hard one. You should have gotten Break Man if you wanted to win this one. What is Bonk's Adventure known as in Japan?
Oh, God.
Oh crap, I should have known this. I was... Damn it. God, I have to resist my urge to go to Hardcore Gaming 101.
Nope. Edge Guy, got anything? You're on Wikipedia right now, aren't you?
I am not, actually.
Yeah.
Super Caveman Adventure.
Yeah, caveman head guy.
Nope. PC Kid.
Oh, because it was PC Engine. Okay.
Oh, there you go. You're right.
Damn. All right.
He was the mascot.
4 points,
so
guys. Not bad.
So
not bad.
Close.
One of
like
your better
one
outings.
One of the few non-sucky mascots of that era.
Yeah, that's true.
Who's cooler, Bonk or Crash?
I'm going to say Bonk just because he's cuter and more likable. And he also didn't make noises.
Yeah, sure. That helps a lot with mascot appeal anymore these days.
Yeah.
I like
Nintendo is very smart to keep Mario's talking to a very bare minimum.
Yeah. Although they did turn
Mario, in Mario game proper, I mean,
yeah.
Like
they turned him into a castrato
up and other things. Yeah, you know.
All right, everyone. Why don't we talk about our week in gaming? You mind if I start off so I can talk about Resident Evil?
I was going to say you've got RE5.
Do
Let's
it.
Go.
Please
that's,
do.
That's the big one.
First of all, David or Andrew, any of you guys pick it up yet or anything?
I will sooner or later.
Okay.
I preemptively defended it, so I kind of have to.
As you'll hear later, I'm in the dark ages of gaming, so that's a pretty qualified no.
No.
You won't play. Right. Well, no ASCII, no play.
So I went to the midnight launch and everything, and it was a bizarre midnight launch. They actually let us hang around the store, which I don't know why they just don't do that every time, but that was nice. So I got to play about 4 or 5 hours into it now, because I played again this morning. And, you know, kind of like what you would expect from the demo, it's very much plays like a Resident Evil 4 thing. And that's good, because Resident Evil 4 is obviously a very well-controlling game. I do have issues so far of, like, the story doesn't seem to be going very many places right now.
I can't remember. Did the story go anywhere in Resident Evil 4?
Well, my point is, in Resident Evil 4, at least, you had an objective really early on. It was, you know, okay, we're going to save the president's daughter. Right. So you kind of had that driving thing, and, you know, from that they were able to kind of, you know, interweave all of the plot twists and all of the motivation and everything like that. But, I mean, in this game, you're just kind of going, and you know that you're a part of some sort of drug, you know, anti-bioweapon thing that's not STARS but is STARS, pretty much. And you know you're doing that, and you know you're looking for some guy, but besides that, your motivation isn't very clear. And, I mean, a lot of it is similar to, like, Resident Evil 4, because, you know, you're going into a strange place, and, look out, the villagers are acting crazy. What's going on here?
Please don't tell me they have the audacity to act surprised still when it's, like, zombies.
They don't, not so much zombies, but there are times where, like, I think there's been two occasions where I go into a room, and there's, like, corpses everywhere, and, like, the girl's like, what could have done this? And at this point, I've already fought, like, three giant zombie, like, things with five tentacles. Like, what could have done this? I can't imagine Sheva. Yeah, Sheva's not impressing me so much so far, but we'll
Did you see her unlockable costume?
Yeah.
Now, that might actually be a little racist.
Wait, what's her unlockable costume? I haven't seen
It's like a leopard skin bikini, and she has, like, a bunch of tribal tattoos and, like, necklaces made out of, like, animal teeth and bones.
So they're not...
So she's basically, like, the African warrior princess.
No. You think they'll also add some DLC for her? Oh God!
I'm sure DLC costumes are coming. Don't worry.
I'm looking forward to the Onee-chanbara costume crossover.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I will say there's a really cool moment, like the very beginning of the game. We're just kind of walking around a village, and like, when you kind of go like right up to a person who's like just cutting meat, he'll stop and kind of like just glare at you and cool things like that.
Actually, yeah, I was about to ask: are there any other friendly NPCs outside of that?
No. Besides that, I have not in game. There have not really been very many friendly NPCs.
Because was one thing I always thought was kind of weird. Like you'd think at least like one person would be maybe passing through this town, or you know, somebody who wasn't infected might see you at some point, other than just the merchant.
Yeah, you don't even have the merchant this time. You just do all your shopping in between chapters. This game's even far more linear than Resident Evil 4 was, as little backtracking as that one had. Mm-hmm. So, and you have the whole kind of co-op dynamic, and I mean, it's
played co-op proper at all yet?
I haven't played co-op, but I am kind of taking some issue with the game seemingly kind of selling its soul for the sake of co-op.
I was worried about that. So, like, how do you mean now?
Well, it's just, I mean, it's hard to ever get very tense when you kind of, like, are constantly doing this buddy cop thing the whole game.
Right.
And, I mean,
that was always the tension of, like, you know, from the original Resident Evil. It's like, you're alone in this mansion. Mm-hmm. Like,
right. And, like, while Resident Evil 4 may not have been outright scary, it managed to be eerie a lot of the times and unsettling. this game doesn't really even have that going for it, I'll say.
Well, any game where you're stuck alone manages to pull off at least some sort of eeriness. That's what I like about that kind of thing. It's like Metroid is by no means a survival horror game, but it still has kind of a spooky atmosphere.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. And, I mean, I'm sure this it pays off well when you are playing co-op and, you know, and you have a friend there, you know. I mean, that is obviously a great experience.
I mean, it can work. I mean, look at Left 4 Dead.
Right.
That game's horrifying, and you're playing that with three other people.
I was scared playing Doom 3 co-op, actually.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Although they used a lot of cheap tactics for that.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
Plus, you have to deal with the AI. And it's not like the AI is not terrible, but when the AI needs to be, like, as good as another person playing a character who is just as powerful as you are, that's a really tall order, and a lot of times it's not going to deliver. I haven't had any bad experiences like in the demo where my partner is going
like
to just
she like ran into the guy with the chainsaw and got her head chopped off and lost.
I'm also have to say I have to question their decision. So far, the two hardest parts of the game are the two bits that they chose for the demo.
Yeah, I always kind of got that sense from playing the demo. Like, this is going to scare people away from this game. When I first played the demo and I did get my head lopped off, I was like pissed. I didn't play it again for another week until I finally beat it.
It is scaring people away a little bit because everyone I talk to now, they think that Resident Evil 5 is some really, really hard game.
Like, the whole age of the one-hit kill is kind of dying, and, this game was like, not this is what this is all about. At least that's what the demos seem to say.
Already so far, I feel like there's been more boss fights than, say, in Resident Evil 4. But it's still, I mean, you know, when you have the system that Resident Evil 4 did, like, you know, I loved Resident Evil 4. So a game that plays like Resident Evil 4 is going to be pretty good, but it doesn't seem like. And I kind of got this sense just from reading of things about it. It doesn't seem like it's going to be a special game the same way Resident Evil 4 was, unfortunately. It's fun.
Let me ask you now, because I know we've had this discussion in the past, but now that you've played it, do you feel moving and shooting should happen in this game?
You know I do now, because they're... At first I was like, you know what, well, they have to keep it Resident Evil-y, but the game doesn't feel very Resident Evil-y.
See, maybe I didn't do a good job of conveying that before. That's what I was trying to say, is like, they've already dropped every other Resident Evil convention. Why does that one have to be the one that sticks around?
Well, it's weird when you think about it in, like, Gears, that you spend, like, 90% of that game undercover, and you can't move and shoot at the same time with that. And I think that's kind of inspired by that. But most people
in Resident Evil, there is no cover, and things are coming at
you
from
all
angles. Yeah,
you're vulnerable.
Exactly.
And that's, like, the one remaining survival horror element, essentially.
Yeah. And, you know, there is still that good sense of ammo management that I know some people would hate, but it does kind of keep you on your toes.
I have no problem with that. That's fine.
I like that.
The inventory box is pretty small now. I mean, I feel like
it has
too
to be
many
real time now. That's frustrating. It's just like, I mean, I understand why it is like that, but
well, you can map a lot of the weapons
and
stuff to the D-pad.
Like, when you're trying to like combine herbs and all
that's
this
sort
crap,
of like
someone's hacking at you.
Alone in the Dark, where you looked into your overcoat in real time.
Oh yeah, which I think the PS3 version.
Yeah, they nixed that because everybody bitched about it.
If they patched the 360, I don't know what's going on with that, but yeah.
I will say there's enemy dogs so far that just kick your ass because they're way too fast for a game where you just have to stand still and aim your pistol and shoot things.
Right.
But like I said, it's fun. I'm enjoying it, but it doesn't. I think making a game that's a lot like Resident Evil 4 is good. I think people would have liked this better if this came out, say, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But this has been like 4 years now since Resident Evil 4. So, and
people
at first I was kind of reading. Yeah, and I was kind of reading the reviews, and I was thinking, I thought people were being too hard on this game, like, by giving it, like, an 8 or an 8.5. But, I mean, where it's going, I think it kind of is heading in that direction. I will say there's a character that just got introduced named Irving that I really like because he talks like an old, like, 1940s, like, gangster in, like, a movie or something. He reminds me of James Cagney, kind of.
Nice.
Awesome.
He's even a little weirder.
So Al Capone got wound up in Africa somehow.
Yes. Yeah. Also, I still don't see any reason why the game needed to be set in Africa other than they wanted it to be.
Yeah, I think they probably just said, okay, let's go for something that we haven't done before.
Yeah, like, right. People liked that European setting, so now we'll just set it in Africa. And there was already a part that was like the on-rail shooter vehicle chase thing that's in every shooting game ever.
And they're so awesome.
Yeah, aren't they, though?
They're always good, so they keep making more.
Oh, the game's gorgeous, by the way. I mean, the game is really good-looking.
Well, that's good.
I mean, it's I can't think of a 360 game that looks better than it, really. So, I'll talk about it a little bit more next week, see if my opinion improves or stays about the same. But we'll see.
All right. Got anything else?
Not too much. I've still been playing through Final Fantasy V. I played some Street Fighter 4 with both Beige and Angry Jedi. I played a lot with Beige the one time. That was fun. And I have to say, that time I got the better of him.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but then I played Pete, who like just got the game, and he was whipping my ass. So I didn't get to play him very long, but I'll have my rematch, make no mistake.
Very good.
Just out of curiosity, where are you in Final Fantasy V? We'll just keep this short.
No problem. I'm just entered the forest where the
nobody cares about spoilers for Final Fantasy V. It doesn't have a plot that's worth your time. It has a parody of Final Fantasy IV's plot, and that's awesome.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, an old man dies just like in Final Fantasy IV, and a little girl replaces him with the exact same techniques.
There we go. Hey, I'm right before where the old man dies.
Okay.
All right. So there we go.
Okay. Yeah.
But right, no, I have to say, I don't know. I've always liked Final Fantasy V a good deal more than Final Fantasy IV, though.
Yeah, I do too. It's
just because of the awesome job system.
Yeah, it's probably in my top three.
Oh well.
I don't know if it's in my. It's up there. It's. I always say from 5 on, excluding 11, I like all of them a lot.
Yeah, I have fond memories of a lot of the ones past 5, but...
Yeah. See, there aren't even memories for me, because this was all just, like, last year, but good
stuff.
Some of
it was last year for me, but a lot of it was being an angsty teenager.
Right. And then, Andrew has kind of been my Team Fortress 2 buddy lately, which has been fun.
That was good times.
It was. What was that one map we were on, a turbine?
Capture
the flag map? I hadn't played that one much before, and I'm always bitching that there aren't enough Capture the Flag maps in the game, so I was kind of happy to kind of sort of discover that one, which was a really cool, you know, symmetrical map, and, you know, not too big, just basically there's 3 ways to get to the flag room, kind of classic, and then the big courtyard in the middle, very reminiscent of something like Two Fort, and we were doing good, and Andrew, you were kind of like our team leader there. You're giving out all the commands over on the voice chat. It was fun stuff.
Well, yeah, I'll just say briefly about Team Fortress. I have been playing it pretty much nonstop since it came out. I recently totaled up how much time I've spent in it, and it was just north of 25 days.
God, so, nice.
Yeah, it's a good thing I don't play any, you know, MMOs or anything like that. But Turbine is a good map. The problem with the CTF maps in Team Fortress 2 tends to be one of just pure size. It's either too small, which is what some people feel about Turbine, or it's too large. One called Aerospace. Well, they shortened Well a little bit, but Aerospace was another one that came to mind, and it's a custom map, but it's on a lot of servers right now. You know, if you can find a good Capture the Flag map, then it's a game that's really conducive to it, just because unless you're a spy or a scout, you will have almost no chance of making it to the intel and back. So, but yeah, you had a very good run on both Turbine and what was the other one we played? Badwater Basin.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I got my scout skills. You know, I've managed to unlock all the scout and pyro weapons right now, which works for me because those are the 2 classes I play.
Now I have to ask, what do you think of the Sandman? This is the wooden bat that you can use, and as long as the meter's charged up, it'll throw a baseball out there and stun whoever you hit with it. And the greater distance it travels, the longer it'll stun them for, including invulnerable enemies. Yeah.
Honestly, I play such an offensive scout that I don't like giving up my double jump for it. Even with the force of nature equipped, I just don't like giving up my double jump. So I usually go Sandman.
I see what you did there.
I didn't even mean to do that, but you know, there it goes. I don't even know if I like holding onto the Bonk energy drink, just because I can usually you know, if I can get myself positioned right, I can take out sentries with my pistol, so I don't like losing my pistol that much either.
The pistol is pretty handy, but you know, it really, I have to say, they made the scout a lot more versatile, and you mm-hmm. can say what you will about the invulnerable enemy stunning with the baseball. Some people say that's cheap, some people say
it's too much.
Yeah, and I'm not really decided one way or the other yet. But I think with the energy drink and the force of nature, they definitely made the scout much more versatile. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for instance, with the energy drink, one good use of it is to chug it. And for those of you who haven't played, its effect is to make you invulnerable for a very short amount of time with a little bit of a sluggishness for a few seconds afterwards.
It's the crash after the energy drink.
Exactly. It's not 5-hour energy.
Exactly.
But
I like using it just to use it and get and the intel is like not in their base anymore, but like in the middle and they're guarding it. I like to just use the energy drink to touch it to kind of keep it alive.
See, and there you go. It's got these little niche uses. Another one mm-hmm. is when you're pushing through. Let's say you're on a payload map. You're escorting the cart down the track, and there's a tough sentry gun nest. The sentry gun targets the nearest player. So if you can bonk energy drink your way up close, you can sort of distract the sentry gun for the other offensive classes to take it out. And then, since they're all there supporting you, the crash doesn't matter so much in the end. So
that is amazing. It's, like, that's some high-level play right there.
I'm going to give a quick shout-out to Gamers with Jobs. They're the people whom I've played a lot of Team Fortress 2 and Left 4 Dead with, and you'll definitely see that kind of high-level play going on.
Nice.
I'm just a big fan of the class updates in general. Can't wait to see the next ones.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited, too, now that I'm so excited to finally be loving Team Fortress 2. I don't know why I didn't before, why it took me so long to get into it, because I played the crap out of Team Fortress Classic back in the day, but I'm having a ball now, so I'm happy. I'll let somebody else go now.
Okay.
Sword guy, go.
Awesome. Okay. I've only been playing two things. I've played Dragon Quest V.
How is that? Because the reviews are good. I tried Dragon Quest IV, and I couldn't get into it, but I don't know. How's Dragon Quest V? How does it compare to 4, for my sake?
It's similar in a lot of ways, but it also has... what really attracted me to it was the party-building mechanic. It's part of why I like Shin Megami Tensei games a lot better than a lot of other Japanese RPGs, is just because it has sort of a monster-collecting thing. Monsters will just randomly join your party after you kick their asses. Sort of like in, if you ever played the Dragon Quest Monsters games for Game Boy Color. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot to it. It's still, like, pretty similar battle system. Not a profoundly deep thing. But it's just fun. Not traditional, at least in terms of story. Like, it's the same story that you've been hearing from every Japanese RPG ever, except told from a different perspective. So you're
how
not,
so? How's this perspective different?
You're not the legendary hero. You're the dude who's holding the sword and shit for the legendary hero trying to find him.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it's different at the very least. And, you know, you get thrown into a slave camp for about 10 years. It's got some cool stuff. You get to see your dad murdered in front of you.
Oh, cool.
That's,
yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff.
What annoyed me about about Dragon Quest IV was just in the beginning it was all those little chapters, and not only wasn't just that there was a silent protagonist, there was several silent protagonists.
Well, those become unsilent after you get them.
See, that's together. Bizarre to me. Like, why don't they just be non-silent? Like,
you know, I don't know.
It's just like they're passing up opportunities to develop them.
Yeah.
I think it was cheaper and easier back then, and it saved memory.
Yeah, because Dragon Quest IV was, despite looking like a 1986 game, even though it came out in 1990, was still pretty big.
But Dragon Quest IV was an NES game, and Dragon Quest V is an SNES game, right?
Yeah.
So is there much of a difference just in that, even now that they've been remade, can you still, like, tell that, like, one was for one generation, one was for the other, just from besides the graphics?
Well, the graphics are about the same. It's still that sort of sprites on a 3D background, sort of Zen Gear style. I you know, I can't really tell a whole lot of difference. They didn't add a whole crap load outside of structural changes. The main changes, from what I can tell, to the actual battle system came in, or the most noticeable ones I noticed were in Dragon Quest VIII, where you could actually target individual enemies, which, revelation. But,
I say that because, like, even when I played Final Fantasy III on the DS, and that was the first time I played it, even though it had all the fancy 3D graphics and stuff, you can still very much tell that this was an NES game.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Well, this, okay, yeah, you can, in some ways, you can tell that it's a Super NES game, and that it's got more story, sort of like how Super NES games were a step above NES games in that sense.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got a few more slightly ambitious things, but for the most part, there's not a ton that couldn't have been done on NES.
All right.
And then the other game I played was Persona 2 Innocent Sin, which is the one that was never released here. But
because there was two Persona 2s, right?
Yeah, Innocent Sin and Eternal Punishment. It was just two halves of essentially one game.
Okay.
Innocent Sin was fan-translated late last year. I think it was October, maybe September. I can't remember. But that one's interesting in that it's just got a sort of non-traditional story in that the idea is that everything in this world is just like normal Japan or whatever, except that rumors are slowly becoming reality. Well, any rumor that has some, or that people have been convinced to believe. And that's how they justified having Hitler resurrected in the plot. Which is pretty rad.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. He leads
He
leads a modern day invasion on Japan. It's pretty awesome.
Huh.
Yeah.
They were allies, I thought. No. I can't believe Hitler betrayed somebody.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
That jerk. I can't believe
it. Oh, man.
But yeah, there's all sorts of other things that as soon as you've played it, you start realizing why it didn't come out over here. Like, you have to kill your high school principal. And it was it was being considered in 1998, right after Columbine. I'm sure it would have flown. Outside of that, you can choose to be gay near the end. Yeah, it's pretty rad. So, if you're willing,
they're always revolutionizing gay, you know.
And in this case, he wasn't just like there was no stereotypical gay television set. This was just a dude who had a crush on you.
Hmm.
Who was in your party. So you couldn't exactly just walk away. But, yeah, it's interesting. For some reason, the whole thing starts off whenever you try and act out a rumor. If you call your own cell phone number, some dude called the Joker, well, not like the Batman villain, but somebody else.
No,
will come,
don't say.
Yeah, yeah. And do your bidding, which tends to involve stealing other people's souls and leaving them as husks.
That's nice.
Yeah. So if you're an asshole, great rumor. But, yeah, and whenever you try and call him, he, for some reason, hates you and then turns a bunch of your friends into zombies. And leaves you with a flower and says that he'll finally come and kick your ass once you remember what you did to him. So it's interesting. If you can deal
that
with
sounds like a bizarre game.
Yeah. If you can deal with the pain in the ass of emulating it, I highly recommend it. Oh, and it also starts off by quoting obscure German poetry, which is the key to success in my heart.
It is. Now, just briefly, gameplay-wise, this, I don't really know much about anything pre-Persona 3. Do they play like Persona 3 does? Is it pretty different?
It's Persona 3.
Just RPG wise,
yeah.
Just in the RPG mechanics.
Not a whole lot. It took a few of the rough ideas and then drastically changed them. You know how the social links work is essentially just like a weird version of the enemy negotiation in the Core Line Shin Megami Tensei series and in Persona 2 and 1. It's essentially the same. You're picking from three options, except it seems slightly more arbitrary because the demons constantly talk nonsense. So they'll just, like, ask you why humans have hair, and if you tell them it's to protect your brain, then they might be happy. but if you tell them that it's to keep you warm, then they'll be pissed off and try and attack you. So
I like this game.
Yeah.
That sounds sweet.
If you want, I might be able to hook you up later.
I just may. I've got a lot of RPGs in my back burner, but someday I just might have to do that. I have to get through Persona 4 still.
Yeah. Oh, and
that's
as you...
on my to-do list.
Yeah. It's harder, but in some ways it's more forgiving just in that you can save anywhere, and as you walk, you recover SP, or magic points.
Oh, wow.
So.
I love games where you can save anywhere. I love how when they re-released like all of the Final Fantasies on like Game Boy or Game Boy Advance, I was like, you can save anywhere now. I'm like,
well,
yeah.
It was just a quick save, but like, it's the older ones. I care more for the convenience than the difficulty. That's why I like quick saves.
Yeah,
actually, like those.
I don't.
In the Dawn of Souls,
that's
it
such
was
a
saving
crappy way to make
nice.
Things difficult. Though is the limited save system.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Like I don't mind tough games. In fact, I really love them, but you have to do it right.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we move on? Andrew, what have you been playing?
Well, I've already mentioned one of the games that I've dabbled in, and I won't say much more about Team Fortress 2 other than to just still be amazed that I've actually sunk that much time into it. It's the first online game that I've ever played, actually. So
really?
I've been pretty pleased with my experience.
Are you That's scared funny, of yourself looking at that how much time you've played count, though?
Every time a map loads, I get to see that I'm pushing 180 hours of just Demo Man.
Man.
And
that's why I'm always amazed at people who actually type slash played WoW. It was just, I don't play MMOs, but I would never do that just because I'm embarrassed by my playtime in normal games. I could only imagine what it would be like for that.
Right, and this has actually been a game that has, been present for two periods of unemployment, so you can only imagine the hours that got racked up those nights.
I can see.
But the other game through Steam has been Left 4 Dead. Got to play some of that with Ajguy and Scribble and a whole host of people from the squad and other places. It is a whole lot of fun, and actually a patch dropped just this last week that addressed a significant number of major issues, especially in the versus mode. It's not perfect still. For instance, they said that the tank, the really large, hard-to-defeat special infected, would be able to swipe multiple people in one hit, and it seems that that's still not quite there.
Yeah.
But
although
overall,
it was pretty sweet when, as we were coming out of the elevator, when the guy playing the tank on the other team decided to go around and bust through the wall at us, which I totally didn't see coming, and it scared the shit out of me.
It lends itself to some really just purely terrifying moments. I actually played against one team who, this is pre-patch, you could park the tank. If you got the tank, it has a control meter associated with it, and when the control meter runs out for two different people, then the AI takes over. But if it's not close enough, the AI used to just sit there. Now, after the patch, it'll come find you again. But this team I played against, so I actually parked it in the elevator. So right as you're finished with this dramatic event, common infected is pouring over you through the whole thing. You get nice little ding, elevator doors open, enormous tank just rushes out at you. It is a game that just has so many possibilities. We're all looking forward to getting the existing maps converted to versus mode. Right now they're only supporting two of them. Unofficially you can use the others in a versus setting, but you kind of have to finagle it yourself. And they've also announced the survivor mode, which I don't know, have any of y'all heard about this?
Yeah, I think we talked about it a few weeks ago.
Okay, well yeah, it's going to be interesting to see just how long people will be able to hold out, especially when they start throwing large multiples of special infected against you. The one thing I worry about a little bit is whether it's going to encourage people to look for the best exploits and then carry those over into regular play.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that turns out. I mean, I have pretty good faith in Valve, the team for Left 4 Dead, and the team for Team Fortress 2. So I'm sure it won't be too terrible. Other than that, like I said earlier, I'm kind of in the dark ages. The only gaming platforms I have are the PC and a PS2. So, PS2, yeah. I finished Persona 3, and that was about the most recent thing I've done in terms of the console gaming world.
Air 5.
Although Air 5 accepted. All I've also bought Persona 4, but haven't started it. And, oh, I've got three more things. Won't be too long on them. Two games by Derek Yu. The first one I'm sure you'll recognize his name from, Aquaria. Did any of y'all get a chance to play that?
I tried Aquaria. Really cool. Really
I played the demo way back when, yeah.
I had the demo too for a long time and said, you know, the heck with it. I'm just going to shell out the cash and give it a shot. And it, you know, there are areas where it could stand to be more polished, but overall, I certainly am having a good time with it, especially because my number one gaming fear is swimming. You know, all the way from Mario 1, Mario 64 just gave me nightmares. Echo the Dolphin, I was freaking out all the time. I've managed to get that a little bit under control in Aquaria, and it's been nice.
That's good.
The other game by Yu that has really got its hooks into me is Spelunky.
I've heard of that. What is it?
Oh, you really should check it out.
It's a roguelike, right?
It is. It's a roguelike, you know, in terms of the random level generation, random monster placement. You get shops with random items in them, and there's actually different goals that you can have on different levels that you can kind of create for yourself. The ultimate goal is, just in the vein of being a platformer, get from the start to the exit. It's typically from the top of the level to the bottom of the level. And you're only wielding one thing that you carry, which by default is your whip, and you can never lose it, but you can get guns, you can pick up pots, you can pick up skulls, or eventually you'll also be picking up damsels in distress, golden idols from traps, very reminiscent of Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I was going to say, this sounds like Indiana Jones. You've got a whip, you got skulls, you got basically everything that was in the movies.
The first level is the first, I guess, world is the cave setting, and that is highly reminiscent of Indiana Jones. But after a few plays through, you'll be able to understand more about the randomness, the method to its madness. You'll be able to figure out its tips and tricks. Eventually, you'll make it to a jungle level, and then to an ice world, and then to the crazy temple level with mummies and lava pits and crazed priests. It is an absolute hoot. And there's a number of secrets in it that I, after, I guess, almost 600 plays through, and, you know, some of these are incredibly short. I'll die almost instantly. But after so many plays through, I'm still trying to unravel some of its secrets. Very, very fun to play, and I highly recommend everyone give it a chance. You can find it on the TIGSource forums on one of their threads, and it's, you know, completely free to play. Just download, unzip, and you're ready to go.
I was really interested in that one. At first, whenever I saw it, I thought it was Spelunker, and I was terrified because I hate that game. But yeah, very, just from what I've seen, very, very different.
The only other one that I would add is I've dabbled a little bit in Pathologic, and I nominated this somewhat tentatively for the squad's Pile of Shame a while ago, and I figured now would be a good chance to give it a quick try. It is interesting. I would say right now it lacks polish, but holds promise. The basic concept, as near as I can figure out, is a almost Myst-like puzzle game, except to replace the puzzles with conversations. I haven't gotten to anything that's remotely involved fighting yet. It's been a couple hours in and just purely information gathering, but they had a big write-up on it over at Rock Paper Shotgun many months ago, which is when I obtained it. I got it through Gamer's Gate at that time. I'm not sure if it's changed locations or anything, but I'll be sure to report in if it picks up. But right now it chugs a little bit graphically. It's a 3D game, first person, but, you know, kind of dated graphics from this independent team. And the conversation has been interesting. It's sort of set up as a horror mystery. I don't really know the details, but yeah, it's been enjoyable so far.
Cool.
All right, Asguy, why don't you finish
off
there?
Bring it home. So I've been playing more Killzone 2 multiplayer. which, like, since the last time I played it a week ago, has basically somehow transformed into a completely different game, and that game is Team Fortress 2, oddly enough. Because as people have begun unlocking all the classes, I didn't realize this even, but, like, it's Team Fortress 2. There's a guy who builds sentry guns, there's a guy who can cloak, there's another guy who can disguise the other team, there's a medic... you can get rocket launchers. You can get there's a guy who gets a heavy machine gun with lots of armor. It's Team Fortress 2. I did not know that, but it's like and like you won't play in these games until you've ranked up close enough to be with people who are unlocking these things. Like unless you're playing in a rank unlock server, which you can do. So like yeah, gradually the game's just like been kind of transforming from just this kind of straight up shooter. To this very intricate class-based game, and it's still really awesome, and I like it a lot.
I was kind of surprised by how much you do like Killzone 2.
I was very upset in that I didn't realize this, but the PS3 locks your save files, so you can't copy them. So I haven't been able to play single-player all week because it's on your PS3 mic, so I'll play more single-player this weekend. So I've just been playing the multiplayer and having a blast with it. I really like it.
Now, do you still play Dawn of War 2?
Yes, actually, I played a little bit more of that this week. I mean, it's still continuing to be awesome. Scribble and I have been talking of eventually getting some co-op of that going, but we ended up playing Left 4 Dead last night, so that didn't happen. I actually ended up getting, this week, one of the downloads that came out, the NCAA Basketball 09 March Madness Edition. Because basketball's a sport I like, but I never was willing to pay $60 for a video game of basketball. But for $15, I'll give it a shot. And it's pretty good. Like, the biggest hurdle, and I always said this is a problem with all sports games, is, like, they don't teach you the intricacies of the sport. Like, I understand basketball. You dribble a ball, pass it around, and get into the hole. But, like, you know, you go to, like, call a play, and I don't know what any of this stuff means. I'm gradually figuring it out through attrition. But I wish there's just something in these games to say, like, you know, this is what, like, you know, the point guard does, and this is what a post is, and stuff like that. But, like, you know, I'm playing through the bracket. It's last year's bracket. I'm playing as the Pitt Panthers. And, you know, it's good. It looks good and plays good. And I like it. The other noteworthy thing I played this week is they released a demo for Resistance Retribution on the PSP this week. So I played that today, actually. And at first I wasn't really digging it, but the more I played it, the more I actually liked it to the point where I think I might actually get it. It's a third-person shooter made by the guys who did all the PSP SOCOM games. And the way it controls is it's, you know, analog stick is moving, face buttons are aiming, and shoulders are shooting, D-pad does, like, reload and use and stuff like that. But there's, like, a box that's drawn on the screen that basically takes up about a half of the screen area, but just, you know, concentrated in the center, where as long as something is in that box, you will shoot it. So it's, like, really loose auto-aim. And sometimes I still think, like, I keep saying this, but it's true. If they would have just done Metroid Prime controls where just L locked onto something, it would have freed up all the face buttons, and you might have been able to have some better controls. Because, like, there's only one button for switching through weapons, and it's only in one direction. So, like, if I have the shotgun out and I want to go to my assault rifle, I have to scroll through, like, seven weapons to get to it, which is kind of annoying. But, I mean, for the way they went, it's kind of easy, I guess, but it still works, so it's at least enjoyable. And so, yeah, I think it's pretty cool. So, you know, you should all check out the demo if you have a PSP. It's kind of like the first big noteworthy PSP release in a while, so that's exciting.
All right.
And really, that's been it for me, so, yeah.
So, well, right then, why don't you take us to the downloadable game releases?
All right. On the WiiWares, we have Gradius Rebirth. It's a some kind of upgrade of Gradius.
Yeah,
oh, boy.
Or Gradius, as some people say.
Cool.
On the Virtual Console, Alex Kidd, The Lost Stars.
Oh, my God,
Master
it's so
System.
Bad.
Okay, don't buy
it. I emulated it back in the day. It has, you know how the Genesis has really bad voice, or has a really bad sound chip?
Yeah.
Master
yeah.
System has worse, and this has voice samples.
Oh, God.
Oh, it's so amazing. That's the only reason to play it. Anyway, go ahead. Oh, it's crappy Mario clone. Yeah.
All right. On the Xbox Live Arcade, we have Peggle, which I played the demo for that. It's Peggle, and it's sweet.
Cool.
I'm on the cusp of buying it, which is probably a bad idea. Also, Final Fantasy Crystal Defenders, which already came out for the iPhone, and I think it's coming to everything else, too.
What sort of genre is that in?
It's tower defense.
Gotcha.
And it's, you know, it uses like a lot of sprites and the music from Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. and you know, it looks good. The thing is, like with both Peggle and Crystal Defenders, I think I'd rather just play them on my iPhone because they're kind of better portable games, I think. So there's that. And then, like I said, NCAA Basketball 9 March Madness Edition, which is weird. I actually tried to get an answer from Major Nelson on this, but like it's listed as an arcade game, like when you go through the marketplace to download it. But like it breaks every other arcade game rule. There's no trial version. It didn't come out on Wednesday. Like I don't know if this is like maybe them finally opening up to more like maybe something like Burnout coming out for download.
Maybe.
PlayStation Network, PlayStation 3, Red Baron Arcade, which I downloaded the demo for but haven't played yet. Buzz Junior Jungle Party, which is a new Buzz game. They're just doing it as a download, but you need the Buzz controllers from the full game to play it. And something called Astro Tripper. I think it's a twin stick shooter, but I could be completely wrong. And on the PSP, they released Mercury Meltdown, which is like some little kind of Marble Madness-esque game, I believe.
All I know is that it was originally supposed to have an attachment for the PSP that actually had Mercury in it, which is why that couldn't come out.
I was going to say, that's probably a bad
idea. They were afraid of Mercury leaks.
Makes sense. Let's see, goodoldgames.com. They struck up a deal with some company called, I think, Empire Interactive, so they got some of their games, including Enemy Engaged, Apache vs. Havoc, and Pro Pinball Time Shock. Then they also had come out this week Duke Nukem Manhattan Project, which was the 3D third-person Duke game, and Blakestone Aliens of Gold, which looks like a really old first-person shooter.
All right, then. Hey, do you think I should start talking about upcoming games for the retail games, or just keep talking about what came out this week?
Do with what came out this week.
All right.
For now, at least. We'll have to. Can't change this on me on the fly like this.
Fine. Well, Mad World came out for the Wii. Which,
I'm curious to see how that does at retail.
Yeah, we'll see. I bet not well.
I'm probably going to pick it up later.
It looks fun.
Yeah. I'm excited to see Yasumi Matsuno do stuff again.
Mm-hmm. Got Resident Evil 5, came out on PS3 and 360, of course. Mana Kamiya Student Alliance for the PSP.
No idea.
Avalon like Code for the DS. New Plate Control, Mario Power Tennis, and Pikmin for the Wii.
I wonder how Mario Power Tennis is, because I remember that being fun on the game.
Yeah, I almost want to play it, but I don't want to pay money for it again.
Right.
I want to rent that bat. I'd rent that one. I would.
We'll do it this weekend.
I can't wait till Metroid Prime comes out with that.
I'll get that.
Huh. I mean, that game will still stand up incredibly well. Okay, Codename Panzer's Cold War for the PC. Trivial Pursuit for 360, Wii, PS3, and PS2. Oh, boy.
How exciting.
EVE Online, the special edition. George will be happy.
To celebrate the new expansion that came
out. It's like, RE5. Yes, EVE Online.
Boing. Dako Madaki for DS.
What?
I said it. There it is.
Okay.
And then Marble Saga Koronipa.
Oh,
Koronipa.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
That was that marble game. It was like Marble Madness for Wii.
Okay.
And rounding it out is SBK Superbike World Championship for the PS3.
Must be amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure it's good.
All right, so her last thing here, we're going to look at Derek Robbins' top 10 list, and this is the top 10 most unusual Pokemon designs. So,
might lose like Pokemon kick, huh?
How many Pokemon are there now?
There were
some,
because I fell out after a while.
It was 250 with Gold and Silver. Then Ruby and Sapphire had all new ones.
Yeah,
and then Diamond and Pearl had even more new ones. Who knows?
I was under the impression that there were 600 or something.
There might be. Who knows? I still like just thinking about the original 151.
Because those were actually good character... Well, mostly good character designs.
Yes.
Mr. Mime.
Okay. Like I said, mostly.
Jinx.
Jinx was a filthy Sambo, so...
I think both of those aren't even on this list, so we'll see. Number 10 is Tangrowth. Remember, it was like the... evolution of one. It was an evolution of one of a generation one Pokemon. Tangela, remember Tangela?
Yeah, I can remember all of those if I were given like a couple hours.
All right, Tangela is a really crappy grass type Pokemon because he didn't evolve at all. So they made an evolution. You have Porygon Z, which was like Porygon from Pokemon 1 eventually was able to evolve into Porygon 2, and then finally they made it like Porygon Z. And every time it just looks weirder and weirder. You have Palkia. Palkia was the legendary Pokemon from Pokemon Pearl. Kind of, you know, dinosaur looking thing.
Oh, that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. 7 is Claydol, which looks like a
it looks like Nine-Eye from the Timekeeper attraction at Disney World that's not there anymore.
It's a very obscure reference that I understand and very few would.
It looks like
a dreidel.
Some weird combination of pottery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number 6 is Magmar.
Oh, come on.
I like Magmar. Yeah. He kind of reminds me of a Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, but he does look pretty weird.
He does have a butt on his head.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes.
That's unfortunate.
5, you got Voltorb / Electrode, because they were just...
The Pokeballs that were upside down and hurt you.
Exactly. 4 is Garchomp, which is kind of like a weird dinosaur-looking thing.
It's with that head. They seem to have problems with heads.
It looks like it has missile launchers on the sides of its head.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
Weird thing.
And
3
then,
is...
like, Kabuto. Or Kabutops, whatever. The thing
just,
with
just
the
looking
size.
At number... Just looking at number 3, I feel like this would be my pick for number 1. I don't know. We'll see. Probopass? What the hell is this thing?
I don't know. It looks like Easter Island, except with a mustache.
Porn star mustache.
Yeah.
Basically, its most prominent feature is a giant nose. Man,
it's got two like little faces on the side.
Yeah, it has
birds.
Man,
that's a weird Pokemon.
It's like Mr. Potato Head for robots.
I don't want to look at him anymore.
Okay.
Number 2 is Ludicolo. Which looks like that character from Marvel's Capcom.
Yeah,
I was
that's
just
what
say
I was thinking
too. Yeah.
He looks exactly like Taco Man or whatever.
Amiga.
Yeah, Amingo.
Aminga.
Aminga. Whatever.
Amingo. Something. Yeah.
And number 1 is Love Disc, which is basically just a heart, but a fish.
Whatever.
I don't know. I gotta question the absence of Jinx or Mr. Mime. Those are two creepy Pokemon for me.
Yeah, well, one's racist until they changed it to purple. Now it's just racist against eggplants.
Oh, God. That was terribly, terribly racist. Well,
unintentionally, like pretty much any Japanese anime character.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, see, they just don't know anything.
Yeah.
They don't have
racism. Yeah, I don't think it's
country.
Really... I don't think it's really fair for me to call it racism. It's just being weird.
Ignorance.
Crazy Japanese people.
Yeah, it's hard to say. We should make fun of them more so they know what it feels like.
Yeah, I know. Those weirdos.
They got bad teeth or something. Anyways, thanks for listening, everyone.
Jeez.
That's the end of the show.
That was epic.
Yep, good stuff. Guys, thank you once again for joining us.
Yeah, now see, Andrew, was it as bad as you thought it would be?
I've already Twittered that I need more vodka if I'm going to do this again.
That's okay. We can do that.
But no, I appreciate it. Thanks very much for having us on.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us.
Guy, thank you as well.
Thank you, David.
Nicely done.
We'll have to have both of you back on sometime. Good stuff.
Yes.
So thanks again for joining us, everybody. You can find more of the Exploding Barrel at squadronofshame.com. You can find us there.
So nice to say that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, of course, we're still on explodingbarrel.wordpress.com, too, right now, if you need to see us there. You can follow us on Twitter at at twitter.com/explodingbarrel, excuse me. You can contact me at tolkoto@gmail.com.
No.
Oh.
We have new email addresses.
tolkoto@squadronofshame.com.
No way.
Yes.
Oh,
wow.
And I am adjguy@squadronofshame.com. It's very badass.
Oh, you're not adjguy711 anymore. Just
I know,
guy?
It's just adjguy. I'm so happy about that.
Thank God. So what about you guys? If you want to give out any contact information?
You can be
reclusive if you want.
Just real quick, I am on Twitter as Cyranix. That's CYRANIX. And you can kind of find me online with Cyranix.com. It's a work in progress, but, you know, bookmark it now. Come back in a few months, see if I've done anything.
I need to work on those images for you. I'll get to that.
No problem.
Okay. And I'm on Twitter as David D. Wynn, all one word, W-I-N-N. If for some unfathomable reason you should care, I'm there.
Man, I have to say, you have a very cool last name. It's just a win.
Yeah, I guess. It was the bane of my existence in middle school.
Oh, I do want to also add real quick that it's the same name on Steam, so if anyone's looking to hit me up for Left 4 Dead or Team Fortress 2. I'm pretty available.
I will be hitting you up for that pretty soon, probably.
Please do.
All right, everyone, thanks for listening. Hey, Squadron of Shame is going to be recording an Eternal Darkness episode soon. I know I'm going to be there. So look out for that pretty soon. Thanks again for listening, and have a good week. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.